It is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us, of course, every Friday morning. On top of this, he has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And we say good morning to David. Good morning, David. Good morning there, David.
Well, good morning to you. You're faint, but you're here.
Well, we tried Skype, and we got the message, call someplace else. It was really weird. So.
What does Skype know about me that you don't, or that I don't?
I have no idea, but it's par for the course this week anyways with what's been going on.
Is it really? You're having a hard technological time?
Well, Skype updated and Windows updated at the same time, and when one updates, it's bad enough, but when you get two together, it spells computer disaster.
I can imagine.
Well, so how is the state I used to live in for 9 months?
It's still as beautiful as ever. Last night I saw a particularly beautiful part of it, Mount Desert Island. It's an oddly concentrated piece of high land, but in a tiny concentrated area. It literally is an island, although it's easy to get to now with a causeway. A delightful part of Maine, and right by the sea, if it's an island. And guess what? I ate lobster. First time on my trip here.
So how long have you been there before the lobster?
I managed to be here 10 days before I ate lobster.
Oh, strange. I think you really...
A dereliction of duty, right?
Either that or extra points, depending. All right, now speaking of extra points, what I really want to talk about is silence.
Well, what does David want to talk about? It's the media.
I dare say that David wouldn't mind talking about silence and independence, which are two things vastly lacking in our...
Violence and independence.
Not
sure.
Violence. Silence.
Oh, violence.
Silence. Oh, yeah. Silence.
Oh, I didn't say violence either. I also said silence.
Oh, okay, yes. Sorry.
Our two silences are making...
violence. and just the benefit of... The benefit of space, you know, it's so interesting as as screens have obviously become more prevalent. There's no space. It's just harder and harder to see space. And while you are looking at words, you've also, you know, to the side, there's some sort of video or some sort of advert that must claim your attention while you're trying to read something. And it's not conducive to actually assimilating information, as it turns out.
No, a crowded screen is a very hard way to assimilate knowledge. When Bloomberg came up with its terminal, and of course no self-respecting trader would be without one in his office, you could see this plethora of information coming at you, and that visual convention got copied in cable news, and we see civilian TV watchers assaulted with the same kind of detail that a dedicated day trader is sometimes, and it's not the best way to take in information in any sort of coherent way, as we know to our cost. I think if we watch it for too long, I think it's very hard. It's very hard to follow a straight line narrative when you're being bombarded with so many different elements of a story, and sometimes elements not even related to the story coming at you as well.
Yeah, and the problem, because it's been going on for so long now, it's actually created a condition where people don't know, it seems, how to synthesize the nugget of the story. I mean, they're just so overwhelmed by the narrative, if you will. Be like,
yeah, and the wayward narratives, and the sidelines, and the sidebars, and all the extra add-ons that you get with this torrent of information. Yeah, that kind of sensory overload is one of the greatest dangers that we've created for ourselves in our profession of conveying information. We end up not really conveying information at all by conveying too much of it at once. I mean, there's no such thing as too much information, I don't think. But too much of it all simultaneously is incapable of proper assimilation and proper evaluation.
Although what happens is it does work from a disinformation standpoint. Because you just
If you want to confuse people, it's an extremely effective tool. Just feed them more and more stuff to process. Yeah.
And what where I'm going with this is, without a little bit of silence and distance, you don't realize that you have become one of those people that's being disinformed.
Oh sure, yeah. Well, I mean, this is becoming a perpetual bleat of mine, but. Taking a Sabbath or an even more substantial break, like a sabbatical, which is effectively what I'm doing now in the very quiet state of Maine, or you can find quiet here very much more easily than you can in most places, you end up in that perpetual state of overhyped, over everything.
Over everything.
I was over it. I was absolutely over it, and I needed a break, and I'm taking one. But it's a good idea to take one every week, I think. You know, just a day or maybe 2 days. So you just don't take in the digital offerings coming at you pell-mell.
And what that ends up creating is it does, and this is, it's counterintuitive, again, to a bunch of people who haven't had the experience. But having that that break or that silence allows the stuff that will be coming in inevitably to find different places and different channels and perhaps connect to things.
Sure, it gives you a little perspective. It gives you a chance, just a chance to breathe maybe and just let the neurons settle down for a bit. And then you begin to realize within the delivery of information how important silence is, and maybe a little bit of stillness instead of motion in the visual dimensions as well. As broadcasters, you too will know the absolute value of silence. Some of the best interviews ever I've seen have been punctuated, skillfully punctuated by not a flow of words. But for a change, a flow of no words, just silence. And it's extraordinarily powerful. It's a remarkable tool in constructing a soundtrack as well, just using silence now and again. As in visuals, if you could fade to black a little more often and just take a pause, you might be surprised how much effectiveness you generate with that simple technique. You don't have to bombard people continuously without respite.
Right, and one of the other things that screens have done to, let's just say, non-professionals, there's a great, because it looks so easy, people try things, and they don't know about the benefit of leaving some spaces in design. This is now visual. Which makes it that much more workable. I mean, there's obviously some very talented people out there, but one of the things that all screens all the time have created are bunches of signs that really probably looked great when they were designed and perfectly big, but they're either crammed with information that you couldn't possibly assimilate from a visual standpoint, or they're just way too teeny to even read. And we were talking, hopefully along the way, Marshall and I were talking the other day about Burma Shave, about those signs, Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. And you would start, but the signs themselves, as you went for X number of miles to get to Burma Shave, or what seemed like miles to a kid, and for anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, look it up. The signs were big enough to, you could actually read it from a moving vehicle. And I just wonder how for people who are still to this day driving, looking at something that is the size, you know, not looking out the windscreen, but looking down, how you could possibly look out the window and read something the way that in a lot of cases it's presented. And it just
There's many ways in which the word distraction is appropriate. Journalism so often now delivered in the home or whether you're out and about. The out-of-home medium, as marketeers talk about it as being, you've got every single form of distraction. And, of course, it drives you to distraction. Hamlet, when he was mad, was described as being distracted. And that's the measure of so much of our information purveying now. It's so jumbled that it doesn't attract. Well, it attracts you and then it distracts you from whatever main point you might have been trying to get out of the information coming your way.
So, if you're not, you've heard of the greatest generation? No, if you are part of the distracted generation.
This is a generation of distraction, for sure.
And you know who, really, that's not pejorative. It's just, you know, because you take surveys. You wonder why you're stressed. You wonder why you're just jittery. You wonder why life is over-caffeinated, so to speak, just constantly. Yeah. You wonder why you can't sleep.
Well, sometimes the answer is just to narrow things down, absolutely narrow things down. Declutter the mind and maybe declutter your desktop, declutter your screen, and maybe just concentrate on one thing. You know, it's not a bad thing to do nothing. You know, concentrate on not one thing, not a single thing, nothing. And it's sometimes very good just to concentrate on a microcosm instead of trying to take in the entire barrage of information coming at you.
And how do you recommend, because what is happening that's pretty alarming in this barrage of information is the focus obviously is not particularly local. So you've got a situation where the interest is national, but because it's so filtered, you know, it's just coming out of your little dimensional screen. You don't know all of the steps that it takes to get to that level. Now, perhaps I'm not describing it well, but it certainly helps to know how, for example, town council works or local.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But there's nothing particularly sexy about that. Everybody's being fed a diet of, hey, this is what's happening. I mean, everybody's a vast generalization, but for the most part, the distracted generation is being fed a vast diet of, hey, this is what's happening, but they don't have that much of a sense of what goes into it on a, I'm going to use the word local, a more local level. And that's about as apparent in the journalism business as it gets.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, you know, regret the absence of civics lessons, I suppose. But yeah, civics lessons are remarkably unsexy, unless they're conducted by people who really know how to purvey information. And, you know, the best instructors are those who grab your interest. And usually, you know, I'm not going to say this is a foolproof plan every time, but the best communication is that which links microcosm to macrocosm skillfully, that takes breaks a big issue down to small constituent parts, or at least constituent parts which are easy to understand to begin with, and you build them together, as in building bricks, and you create a comprehensible picture of the overview. That's where the skill lies, and of course it's not what we're getting most time, because there's no attempt to construct, to give context, you know, construct in the sense of build an overview, and that's regrettable, but I get here and there in areas of online where long form journalism is creeping back. There's even some efforts to in some of the more ambitious websites to take a pause, say every month, and put something on paper. Even publish a print version of their long form work. Just to remind people that you can sit down and read a piece thoroughly and break it down into its constituent parts, because that was how it was put together from constituent parts, and you tend not to get those when you're consuming things on a screen, certainly not delivered to you in narrative form live on cable news. I see some tendencies in our landscape overall in media for some kind of breakaway from the pell-mell, some efforts here and there which will maybe settle on grateful and repeating ears, people who will see the example and follow it, and maybe another generation apart from the to follow on from the distracted generation can start putting things together in ways that are carefully mounted and carefully considered, instead of just being random and making up a barrage.
And how would you how would you advise bringing back local or trying to recreate?
I mean, bringing back local? Yeah. Oh well, I think it's got an energy of its own. I have to say, local matters. What we're finding, I think, and this is true even in the digital world, where of course you can get anything you want. Well, not anything you want, but you can get a remarkable spread of information from all over the world. It really is the World Wide Web. But people are finding, digital operatives in the marketplace are finding that local stories can have their life too. In a local, basically in the operation of the old notion of a patch. I wouldn't dismiss this as something sort of ruled out by the international and broadband kind of way of approaching news that has become much easier and therefore much more prevalent overall. There's hope yet in the local story. And remember, if it involves someone you know, you're that much likely to follow the story. And if it's about someone you at least a place that you know well. A system that you understand because it operates in your daily life, then you're going to hang on to it with a lot more interest than you would with overseas or international relations stories.
That is true. And also, if you have been involved locally, you also know where misinformation and opinion can filter their way into a situation. You actually see the breakdown, and you see where there is great power in journalism, both positive and negative. Because
sure.
You know, if you know the people involved, you have a better sense of, because this is always forgotten as you move up and widen out, that you're still talking, the people that are being talked about, there are a whole bunch of other people around them who know exactly what's going on that you're not hearing about.
Yeah.
You know, it's always focused on like one person, and you forget.
And very, very big stories often have very, very local angles too. I mean, everyone comes from somewhere. That's one of the fundamental points of journalism that shouldn't be forgotten. There's a story I do want to talk about this week that's been playing very strongly in Houston, Texas, because that's where the individual concerned originates. His family comes from Houston. And that's a story I don't want to go missing this week. It's now 6 years since a man called Austin Tice was abducted in Syria. He was a young freelance journalist. parents from Houston have been campaigning all these 6 years for his release, trying to pressurize the United States government, the Syrian government, if you can get it to do anything in the course of a war. And it's likely that he is being held by government-supporting militiamen, though we can't know that for sure. And, of course, by going for publicity, his parents are hoping to get the support of all interested and connected parties who might be able to help. And there's some evidence, even after his 6 years, that he may still be alive and it may be possible to get him back. The FBI is now offering $1 million reward for information leading to his safe return. We're not told what the evidence is, but there does seem to be evidence that he is alive. And here's a story that I think really is so easily glossed over, and this week people have been making some nods to the fact that it's an anniversary. And of course his parents have been doing what they need to do, which is to go on the news shows, breakfast shows in particular this week. But it's just important, I think, just to be in that same spirit of pausing and looking at the baseline element of the story here. Here is a human being held against his will for 6 years, doing the job that I do and many others do, and arrested for doing that job, in effect. He's a young man. I feel some fellow feeling with him. 2 years into his college course at Georgetown Law School, he just could not resist the pull of journalism. That was the case for me, too. The difference between me and Austin Tice is that Austin Tice was already well aware of the risks he was taking. He'd already served as a Marine in Iraq and Afghanistan before going to Georgetown Law School. But he wanted to go back into the war theater because the civil war in Syria had broken out, and he wanted to cover this war about which the United States public knew little and seemed to care even less. And he ended up freelancing. He wasn't backed by a major journalistic organization. He did freelance for McClatchy newspapers on an occasional basis and the Washington Post rather less frequently. But he's one of the point about his story is not just the horror of this happening to one individual and the pain of one individual family, but he's one of untold numbers of journalists who are being held against their will, 7 that we know of in Syria. I mean, imprisoned by the Syrian authorities, and countless more that we just simply cannot get numbers for. Missing, maybe held by other forces, militias unofficially connected with government, and of course in some cases some militias of the opposition, and let's not forget this too. This war began in 2012, 6 years, it's now, let me just check the number, it's now 122 journalists killed since the war started, and the latest only this week. A cameraman named Ahmed Azizi, who's from Aleppo, died in Aleppo province itself in a Russian missile strike. So every now and again, I want to just pause and say this job of journalism has its casualties, just like armies do and civilians do in civilian collateral casualties. It's important just now and again to remember that this cause of getting Austin Tice back home is a cause for all of us. And it sits so horribly antithetical to the campaign going on in this generalized way at the moment between our president and the profession as a whole. When you get 300 newspapers coordinating their editorials to say to the president of the United States, "You're wrong. We are not enemies of the people." Yeah, I think you've elevated this thing into a sort of blowhard contest at at mega level, and I just want to come back to the basic ground level of individual journalists on the ground doing a hard job very often, and often at great risk to themselves, like Austin Tice.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
And, of course, you can hear David Monday on Monday, Fridays here on Robinhood Radio. We rebroadcast David, of course, on the weekends and
on Mondays.
And then on Mondays in the 12 noon hour.